Hello, welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service, coming to you live from London. I'm Paul Henley. First, the head of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, has urged rich and developing nations to stop the finger-pointing and end the deadlock at the COP27 climate talks in Egypt.
We must have agreed solutions in front of us to respond to loss and damage, to close the emissions gap, and to deliver on finance. The climate clock is ticking, and trust keeps eroding. The parties at COP27 have a chance to make a difference here and now, and I urge them to act, and act quickly.
The loss and damage scheme he mentioned was only approved as part of the formal agenda for these talks right at the start of the summit. The idea that rich countries should compensate poorer, more exposed ones for the effects of emissions. With the two-week conference officially having been due to wrap up today, negotiators face a long night as they scramble to find compromises and prevent the talks from collapsing. Earlier, I spoke to the BBC's environment correspondent, Matt McGrath, who's in Sharm el-Sheikh.
The conference was supposed to wrap up earlier today. It obviously hasn't, and it's pretty much par for the course at these type of events now that they run over and run over significantly. There are a number of key issues, as you've mentioned, holding up progress here. The most central part of this jigsaw, the central piece that has to be resolved, is this question of loss and damage. And I think if compromise can be found on that, it will unlock the rest of the negotiation and it could come to a successful agreement. But it's not there yet.
What kind of compromise might they be talking about?
The European Union has put a plan on the table that it would accept the idea of a fund. Now, that might not sound like great news to anybody, but if you think 2 weeks ago the US and the EU were even refusing to have a discussion about the idea of loss and damage for fear that they would somehow be on the hook for litigation lasting perhaps centuries and huge amounts of money. So they've come a long way in a very short period of time. The EU is proposing a plan to start a fund and is looking for a wide range of donors. So it's looking to China as one of the countries that should be paying in. Now, under the UN scheme, China is classed as a developing country and doesn't have to pay climate finance. They're looking for some sort of possibly voluntary contribution from China to help fill out that particular fund. But that obviously is a proposal that wouldn't have gone down particularly well with the Chinese.
Another controversial point has been allowing countries to trade carbon credits, as they're called, so they can hit their climate targets. Where are the two sides of the argument there?
There's a lot of discussion about this and has been running for a number of years. It is not one of the preeminent aspects of this discussion, but it is one that continually defies negotiators to make progress on. One of the issues that has come up here is about whether or not some credits could be hidden, if you like. They wouldn't be visible to other countries and therefore they could count in one country and indeed in another country's inventory of credits. It's very complicated. I think the number of people who understand this in the world is probably countable on the fingers of one hand. But it is one of those ongoing issues, particularly for countries with large areas of land and forests, such as Brazil, who are looking to try and monetize that, if you like. That issue continues to dog these particular talks. It is not the major holdup here. In fact, there are many others to choose from, but it's still there and continues to erode some confidence in the system as it proves intractable.
Matt McGrath reporting from Egypt. Now, the Seychelles, a small island nation in the Indian Ocean off the east coast of Africa, are at the sharp end of climate change. Although they're among the richest of African countries in terms of per capita income, they hope to benefit from loss and damage payments because of the existential threat that they face to much of their coastline. I've been speaking to Flavien Joubert, who is the Seychelles Minister for Agriculture, Climate Change and the Environment. I asked him why he thought the loss and damage argument was such a tricky one.
Well, I tend to think that it has to do with the implications of it. I think many countries have made it known that just accepting a loss and damage mechanism would open the door to a lot of things in the future. So I'm sure, especially the countries that are liable to contribute to this facility, would see it as a very tricky thing to commit to. So you have two sides who are trying to come to a position that is agreeable to both of them. So we were not expecting anything different.
Why is it such an important issue for the Seychelles?
We are a small island state. We are faced oftentimes with real issues that has to do with climate. For example, if you look at the coastal areas, we have a slow onset erosion and a lot of things happening that are threatening our infrastructure. And at some point, it would actually have a huge impact on the country's economy and the possibilities that exist for the country. So it is something that is important to us as we move forward with the impact of climate change. We see that happening in a more dramatic fashion in other bigger countries. And we tend to think that it could also happen to us.
And clearly, as a country that is only recently industrialized, is a small nation, you're not a huge contributor to the problem. On the other hand, you have a big tourist industry, and you're the cause of lots of planes flying in and out of the country. You'll appreciate that.
We do appreciate that. It's an unfortunate thing, but we have to also find ways to get our population to an adequate level of living standard. So it is a difficult question to answer, of course. But until such time that we have improved ways of traveling for tourists and we have other more energy efficient and measures with less emissions, we would have to try and deal with it. But on the other hand, Seychelles is doing a lot of extra effort to protect the natural assets that we have.
Some countries like Germany, Denmark, Scotland have already made funding commitments. What do you make of those?
Well, I think it's a good start. It's something that could prompt other countries to come forward. In the past, it seemed that it was something that was a no-go. But once some countries start contributing, I think that could set the ball rolling and it could change the way we perceive such a facility.
You'll know that China and the US are currently opponents to a big international fund. Do you accept China's point of view that historically it hasn't been a big contributor to global warming? It is now, of course, and therefore doesn't bear such a responsibility.
Well, there are a lot of discussions within the different big emitters. But I think at the end of the day, we have to accept that we have a problem and we have to look at the numbers where we are standing now. And we have to consider that we need to do whatever we can do as a country.
You haven't said anything specifically about China at all there.
I don't want to commit about one particular country. It's very difficult to just point...
It's currently the biggest polluter in the world.
Yeah, I would not point a finger at one particular country because they're also analysing their numbers. But my point is that all countries have to commit, have to put in the effort to actually reduce emissions.
And I know you've got a team in Sharm el-Sheikh that you're in touch with. Are they hopeful?
Well, they have sent me messages. For example, yesterday there was a text that came out about that included loss and damage. And they were a bit more positive about what's coming out. Also, I've had some interactions with other representatives of other island states, and they are much more positive with the messages that are coming out. But now we have to see the commitment and we have to see the fund and the mechanisms and everything. But they tend to agree that the discussions are heading in the right direction.
Flavien Joubert, the Seychelles Minister for Agriculture, Climate Change and the Environment.